What side did you take when it came to the strike in 1966 and even the little strikes before that?
The staff weren't involved.
Were they not?
No. No, at that time, it was permissible for the staff to pass a picket and nobody passed any remarks. I don't think that would be the position at the present moment.
Yes. But the effect...
And we went in and just did nothing at all, like, you know. Yeah. It was embarrassing.
And
19 weeks.
But again, all the people that suffered because of that strike, the people who were cutting the trees weren't cutting them, you know, there was no orders going out.
I had to make it quite clear to every contractor that bought the timber, I got a contract from us, you can deliver so much a week, but it's on a day-to-day basis. You don't know what's going to happen in any private industry that's going to cause me to come out to you someday and say, you have to stop production. Mm. And find it somewhere else. But if it was our timber, he couldn't touch it. If it was timber that the contractor had bought himself and was selling to Clondalkin, well, then he could find other markets. Mm. But he couldn't find other markets for ours. That was there. And then, of course, we were going, at a time like that, we were coming under very severe pressure from the department. Get that timber out. You're supposed to have it out by such and such a time. If you have a strike out there, it's none of our business. That line was taken, you know.
Bully tactics.
Yeah, bully tactics. I got back at them again because they decided to cut timber themselves and to put it on roadside available for us, and they would have it on roadside by such and such a date, and they didn't. And I wrote a similar letter to them, telling them, you haven't got the timber out the day you said you would.
I suppose we have to talk about the process from the day the timber arrives in the yard.
Into the yard, right
through.
Okay. Now, there was one big problem there all the time, and that is to get proper debarking of a high enough standard to be acceptable, the timber shouldn't be in the yard any longer than 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was a practicality that was almost impossible to achieve, with the result that we had to do extra debarking in order to get the bark on. When the bark dries into the timber, it's tough and it won't come off on the first roll around. There was a barking drum, holds 40 tons of timber, and it's turning the whole time. And it's the friction of one log against another that debarks the timber. But it will only do it if the bark is fresh. But we had that problem. We had to cope with it the best way we could. Sometimes we had to sell away stacks of timber as firewood that had got too dry in the yard, because you could not dovetail the quantity of intake equal to the quantity of production, because you didn't know the quantity of production from one day to the next sometimes. If a sudden order came in for newsprint or wallpaper base, well, that was big work overtime and all that kind of thing. Mm. On the other hand, if it was only envelope manila or something like that, it was a difficult pulp to make. You were on a slow production line. So that was a problem that we had with the stuff coming in.
Yeah.
That we found it always, and we didn't ever succeed in solving that problem of having the amount of stuff on the yard equal to the amount of production.
What was the next process?
Oh, the next day, yeah. After the debarking, then, there was a grinder, which ground the timber up into a kind of a porridge, with water added, of course. And that ran onto a wire, and the water drained off. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, you had a sheet that looked like a sheet of paper. But in actual fact, it was a sheet of pulp. Because to make any kind of paper at all, you have a three-stage timber, pulp, paper. And there are two different types of pulp, mechanical and chemical. Clondalkin never touched chemical because it was so vast that it would 80% of the whole log would be waste, and there'd be only 20% going into paper. Because the purest of stuff coming from Scandinavia, you couldn't beat that for quality. But
Sorry. Okay. No, it's okay. It's a good time to interview. It really is.
Clondalkin couldn't touch making the highest quality pulp because that kind of quantity of timber didn't exist in the country at the time, even if there were no other competitors taking taking the wood from the forest.
Okay.
The quantity of timber just was not there. So Clondalkin had to be content with making mechanical pulp, which was only suitable for making newsprint or a wallpaper base. And that was a limited market. The rest of the stuff was exported to England.
Yeah.
Mrs. Thatcher got being her bonnet that she wasn't buying any more pulp from Ireland. And that was the beginning of the sinking of the groundwood mill in Clondalkin. The groundwood mill started in 1956, and it was working on the basis of a lower production for a long time. But eventually somebody convinced Dr. Cusick to go to America that there were new machines made that would dispense with labour and would produce an enormous amount of pulp in a very short time. Make a long story short, he bought them, but they didn't do it. They operated at double the power that they stated they could operate at, which meant that in Clondalkin village, at 4 o'clock in the evening, at peak time, we had to close down to allow electricity through the village. And eventually, Dr. Cusick coined a phrase at the time which was very apt. They called me to America and they told me that I was the early bird, but I was the early worm. The machines didn't work. So anyway, they did a deal and they replaced them, and it was a big improvement, but there was a big losses incurred in all of that, in the whole production in Clondalkin. The market was gone. And also the ability to produce was reduced very, very low because of the first failure of the machinery that he bought in America. So that's what I can tell you about that,
And the recycled material coming in, the used papers, daily newspapers.
No, Clondalkin wasn't very much into that at all.
Were they not?
They bought pulp from Sweden, the highest quality chemical pulp, to make the highest quality paper. Clondalkin made the best paper that you could imagine in Clondalkin by using foreign pulp that they were importing. But they couldn't use their own pulp they were making from their timber because the means of the production of that timber into pulp was not there. It was mechanical pulp rather than chemical pulp. An awful difference.
And the wrong kind of machinery was bought for the Irish.
I wouldn't say the wrong kind of machinery, but the machinery was as per specification, but it just didn't perform.
Did it not?
Didn't perform as per the usage of power or the output.
Hmm. To go back to England and Maggie Thatcher, why do you think that she stopped?
There was a massive pulp mill erected in somewhere in Scotland, and that was providing England with its requirements. That was one of the fundamental things. Plus the fact that there was a downturn in the economy in England, and production was reduced accordingly.
Yeah. But there was also new competition coming in here from abroad too, with the open market.
Oh, there was, yeah, that's right. A foreign paper could come in freely, that's right, yeah. That was a factor. I wouldn't be au fait with the details of that, but obviously it was a factor.
Yes. When it came to the agreements made by the workers for a 4-day four shifts.
Yeah.
You worked the four shifts, did you?
No. I wasn't on shift at all. I wasn't on the clock even. I was in Clondalkin. If you were on the staff, you came in and you signed on the morning at 9 o'clock, and you didn't start until 9, and everybody else started at 8 o'clock. There was that little bit of class stuff going on, going strong in the country at the time. But we weren't involved in the four shifts at all. No.
Okay.
You see, in my situation, there were days I wouldn't report in at all, but I'd go straight to the railway station to buy timber, And would my boss Frank Fagan, he would know of the days that I wouldn't be attending and where I would be, what forests I would be at.
Mm. Frank passed away only a short time ago.
That's right.
Frank Fagan. What kind of a boss? Could you describe that man to me?
Well, that wouldn't be fair now.
he
was, in a lot of ways, he was more than up for the job. In other ways, he wasn't up to it at all. He had no patience with anybody. I hate saying this, and I don't want this going in any record now.
Okay.
That isn't fair. No. I got on okay with Frank Fagan. I knew how to handle him, and I think he knew how to handle me.
And so the working relationship between you was...
Well, it was okay at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty of rows.
But you had your few ups and downs.
When he'd panic, he'd go in the wrong direction in making the judgment. He tended to do that. He'd panic about something, but he'd make the wrong decision. The glaringly wrong decision kind of thing, you know. But he carried, I have to say, this, my final words on Frank Fagan, at the end of the day, he carried the job to the end and he got a solution to it. And he never failed on anything at the end of the day, but he made it hard for himself.
Mm. How many of you in that department?
Yeah, there was me, Frank Fagan, and what's this the other fellow's name was? He had an assistant, and I forget his name.
Was it McCarty?
Ah, yeah, McCarty is right, yes. That's right.
When you were making your way around the country, what kind of transport?
Right, okay. The first thing was the country had to be divided into about 12 different regions, with a contractor appointed to each region to do the actual work of getting the timber cut and felled and hauled into Clondalkin. I had to do that from the people that I knew. I had a big field to operate from with regards to that. And then when I would get the sheets of timber for sale out from the department, I would go through them, select what I wanted, and make an appointment with some of those fellows, whichever were relevant, meet me at Mullingar railway station at 8 o'clock on such and such a morning, at no, 9 o'clock, such and such a morning, or Port Leisha with your car. I'll meet you there. We're going to Leitrim. So we go down to Leitrim and look at a lot of timber in Leitrim, discuss it. Both me from a quality point of view, I had to take it all in, and he had to make sure there were roads and all that suitable for getting the timber out and getting it home, come to an agreement, and I would make up a price for that, taking into account what he would charge, and everything that would be involved had to go into that melting pot of a price, work it out on the train coming home, send the tender into the department and see what happened. Might get it, might not. That's the way that operated.
Well, that was an extraordinary system, wasn't it?
It was.
But it worked.
Oh, it worked like a dream. I was called over to Dr. Cusick's office for, you never knew this, for a bonus. I didn't know he gave out bonuses, but I got it was great to get it, just for the sake of recognition that you got, that you were doing something that was appreciated.
And so the logistics of doing that, of planning it, did you plan the whole thing?
Oh, I planned all of that. I planned everything was in my lap. Every single aspect of purchasing was my responsibility.
But because you did all of that, why didn't you climb the ladder?
No ladder to climb. That's all Clondalkin wanted of anybody, and I didn't want to leave Clondalkin. I didn't want to leave here. I like this, and I set up a little business here, Forest Harvest, where I sell garden sheds, dog kennels, fencing material, all of that.
So timber was your love for all your life,
timber,
really?
Timber was my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it? What is the beauty about trees and woods and...
Well, I think, you know, it's all says under a tree that looks at God all day and leaves her leafy arms to pray.
Yeah.
That in itself should attract, I think, any normal thinking person to trees, but it attracted me in more ways than one.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a small little fella gathering up little bits of sticks to bring them in for the fire because there were sticks. Not because there were pieces of coal or anything like that.